This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
People really have nothing. We're at a point now where people are basically starting from scratch, and we have 1.9 million, about 85% of Gaza's population displaced out of 2.3 million. And we have about more than 60% of Gaza's housing units are damaged or destroyed.
That's Norwegian Refugee Council team member Shayana Law in Jerusalem on her group being forced to shut down most operations in Gaza because of the chaos. Details coming up. Also, the World Health Organization warns Sudan's health and humanitarian crisis is deepening. And most opposition candidates in Zimbabwe were banned from running in by-elections tomorrow. Details coming up. All these and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The World Health Organization warns Sudan's health and humanitarian crisis is deepening amid ongoing fighting, mass displacement, and disease outbreaks. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since rival military leaders plunged Sudan into conflict in mid-April, the country's Ministry of Health reports more than 12,000 people have been killed and over 33,000 injured. Additionally, the World Health Organization says Sudan is facing the world's largest displacement crisis. It reports nearly 6.8 million people have fled their homes, seeking safety in Sudan or in neighboring countries. The WHO representative in Sudan, Mohammed Taufik Mashal, says this mass population movement increases people's vulnerability to diseases, malnutrition, gender-based violence, and acute mental health distress. Speaking to journalists from Port Sudan, he says efforts are underway to contain the spread of recent outbreaks of cholera, measles, and dengue.
We are working with the federal and state ministries of health, with other UN agencies, with our implementing partners, in order to sustain essential, most needed, and life-saving health services to the most needy people of Sudan. They need these services now more than ever.
WHO reports aid delivery to some parts of Sudan, especially in the capital Khartoum and in Darfur, is very difficult because of the violence as Sudan's army and the rival Rapid Support Forces militia battle for control of the country. Mashal says the situation in Darfur is of particular concern. He notes many hospitals are inaccessible and insecurity prevents humanitarian aid from being safely delivered. He says 43% of Sudan's population is at risk of food insecurity. Also, 3.2 million children under 5 reportedly are acutely malnourished, including 700,000 who are severely acutely malnourished, a condition that can lead to death if not treated.
This 100,000 of them are severely acute malnourished with medical complications which require hospitalization and hospital care too. So that is why WHO activated 20 stabilization centers across the states, WHO providing medicine over there, as well as operational support to these stabilization centers.
Mashal says lack of international support is making it increasingly more difficult for WHO to provide essential health care to the millions in need. He says only $9 million of WHO's $98 million health emergency response plan has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you. A Zimbabwe court has barred most opposition candidates from running in by-election tomorrow, a move that could take the ruling ZANU-PF party closer to changing the constitution. The ruling is the latest twist in a battle for control of the opposition, Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, amid heightened political tensions in the mineral-rich nation. The Harare High Court ruled in favor of Sazengo Shibangu, whom the CCC leadership says is an imposter. In October, claiming to be the party's interim secretary general, Shibangu had the seats of 14 CCC lawmakers declared vacant by parliament. This triggered by-elections in 9 constituencies the CCC won under a first-past-the-post system in a disputed election in August. The recalled MPs sought to win their seats back in the new votes scheduled for Saturday. Shibangu argued that they could not run under the CCC banner without his approval and won in court. A Harare judge ordered the names of 8 of the 9 lawmakers be struck off the ballot. CCC spokesperson Promise Makwenzi said the party has appealed the ruling at the Supreme Court. ZANU-PF victories in the by-elections would take it closer to the 2/3 parliamentary majority needed to amend the constitution. Voters in the Democratic Republic of Congo head to the polls on December the 20th. More than 20 candidates, including the incumbent, are running for the highest office in the DRC. VOA's Paul Ndiho has the story.
It is campaign season in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and several candidates are generating a buzz. Incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi is running for re-election and is vowing to transform Congo. He is promising to create jobs following a first term marked by economic growth. Still, soaring inflation could derail his chances of winning what is expected to be a hotly contested election. Some analysts say that this could be a repeat of 2018, when Martin Fayulu, a former oil executive, finished second. Fayulu's popularity has also soared in the last 5 years, and his supporters have referred to him as the president-elect, arguing that he was the true winner of the 2018 election. Muhizi Katumbi, 58, is another candidate vying for the nation's highest office. He is a wealthy businessman and is a former governor of the Katanga province, the mineral-rich economic motor of Congo. Katumbi argues that his track record of developing Katanga as a provincial governor qualifies him for the presidency. A new entrant to the race is Dennis Mukwege, a renowned surgical gynecologist who was awarded the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to end sexual violence. The 68-year-old has long been a government critic and has repeatedly urged justice for the victims of the brutal conflict in the East. Despite his fame, Mukwege has no solid political base, and critics say that it might be hard for him to translate his fame into a political win at the polls. More than 20 other candidates are vying for the top job, but political observers say that the lack of unity among the opposition could only help incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Israel has designated a safe zone in southern Gaza, but aid organizations say it is widening military offensive has left Palestinians packed together in dire humanitarian conditions. Aid groups are limited by fighting and restrictions imposed by the military. The United Nations estimates 1.9 million people have been displaced. Most lack food, water and medicine. Around 1,200 people have died on the Israeli side, mainly civilians killed during Hamas's October 7th attack that triggered the war. The health ministry in Hamas-run Gaza said the death toll in the territory is nearing 17,500. The ministry does not differentiate between civilian and combatant deaths, but said 70% were women and children. Also today, UN monitors said Israeli troops reportedly detained men and boys from the age of 15 in northern Gaza. An Israeli official said security forces were questioning the detainees, who he said were picked up in Hamas strongholds to determine whether they were members of the militant group. Later today, the United Nations Security Council is scheduled to vote on a new ceasefire resolution for Gaza. The vote originally was set for in the morning in New York, but was postponed until 5:30 p.m. because U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is meeting with diplomats from the countries in the League of Arab States and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to discuss the crisis. Earlier today, he met with Qatari Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani. The U.S. worked with Qatar and Egypt to negotiate an earlier 7-day truce in Gaza. The Norwegian Refugee Council said this week it has been forced to halt nearly all aid operations in Gaza due to the bombardment, the chaos, and the panic in the enclave. NRC Secretary General Jan Egeland said that the pulverizing of Gaza ranks among the worst assaults on any civilian population in our time and age. NRC team member Shiana Law in Jerusalem tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the assault on Gaza continues from every direction. She says her group, like many other international organizations and the United Nations Secretary General, is calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Hamas-Israeli war.
What we've seen is the continuous bombardment from the land, air, and sea, Israeli airstrikes, tank shelling, Navy shelling, and then the expansion of Israel's ground operation. And along with the directive calling on residents of Khan Yunis to move further south and west. And so we've seen a massive influx of people into Rafah and the El Mawasi area and its surroundings, which is El Mawasi, is a barren strip of land along the Mediterranean coast that has no facilities or accommodations to host these people. The humanitarian situation is rapidly deteriorating even more than it already had been. We ourselves, in terms of our staff themselves, are struggling to have their basic needs met. We have several staff who are sleeping on the streets because they have no safe place to seek shelter. And so the challenges our staff are facing are making it increasingly difficult for them when they cannot help themselves to help others. But also because of the panic and chaos in the streets, it makes distributing the limited aid in Gaza incredibly difficult because people are desperate and it's leading to civil unrest.
What kind of things do the Palestinian people need that they're just not getting? Are you talking like water, food? What are you talking about?
At this point, it's basically everything and anything you can imagine. So it's food, water, medicines, medical supplies, shelter materials. That includes both tents, because so many people are displaced, kits, what are called sealing off kits, which are used to repair damaged homes and prevent elements from reaching people inside, mattresses, blankets, like warm winter clothes, because people really have nothing. We're at a point now where people are basically starting from scratch, and we have 1.9 million, about 85% of Gaza's population displaced out of 2.3 million. And we have about more than 60% of Gaza's housing units are damaged or destroyed. And so you have just a huge, massive number of people who are homeless and have absolutely nothing. So it's everything that's needed for basic survival at this point.
Is there any place in Gaza right now that people feel somewhat safe?
No, there's no place in Gaza that people feel safe. This idea that people are being called on to evacuate, and I don't even like to use the term evacuate because this isn't evacuation. These are directives to move. But under international humanitarian law, evacuation should be done in a way that is safely safe, that guarantees the safety of those fleeing, that they're guaranteed their safety in the places that they are forced to flee to, and that they have guarantees of their right to return home once hostilities have ended. That hasn't happened. And we've seen that since all the way back to October 13th, when Israel called on residents of northern Gaza and Gaza City to move south. We ourselves at NRC have had staff who fled the north, went to southern Gaza, went to Rafah, and were bombed in the homes that they were seeking shelter there. We had one staff member lose 10 members of her family, including her only child, who was a 7-year-old boy.
So what is the NRC asking for?
The only way to guarantee the safety of civilians, prevent further death and destruction, is to have a complete, permanent, sustained ceasefire.
That's the Norwegian consul Shayana Law. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Jerusalem today. About 200,000 Israelis have been evacuated from their homes in communities near the border with Gaza in the south or Lebanon in the north. They've been living in hotels and guest houses for 2 months now, and they have no idea when they will be able to go home. Linda Gratstein reports from Mali Hamish near Jerusalem.
Some of the about 200,000 Israelis evacuated from communities near the borders with Gaza and Lebanon have nowhere to return to after their homes were bombed or burned by Hamas militants on October 7th. In the meantime, all of the evacuees have been living in limbo in hotels and guest houses all over Israel, including the Ya'arim Hotel at Ma'ale HaChamisha outside of Jerusalem. They say they don't know when or if they will feel safe enough to return. Or Amar Ashush is from a community very close to the Gaza border. She says nobody can promise them that another Hamas assault won't happen. Many fled their homes immediately after the Hamas attack with nothing but the clothes on their backs. Volunteers mobilized to collect and distribute thousands of cartons of clothing, toys, and household items for the evacuee centers. This hotel provides room and 3 meals a day, as well as health services and recreational activities. Children have been integrated into local schools, and a nursery school has been opened inside the hotel. One of the teachers says the children seem calmer and happier now, 2 months after the October 7th attack. Ada Brodsky is a nursery school teacher at the hotel.
In the beginning, they were very frightened. Any loud noise would scare them. There's a house here that was built by a volunteer that came, and many of the kids would crawl into it and find a safe haven for themselves. And they would close the windows and the doors. They would put blankets over the windows so that the baddies wouldn't be able to come in and find them.
About 400 of the original 550 evacuees from two Gaza border communities remain at the Ma'ale HaChamisha Hotel. Some have found alternative housing, either renting apartments or moving in with relatives. They say that families living long-term in small hotel rooms is challenging, especially for those already coping with trauma and stress. Shiran Asaraf Michaeli is the evacuee coordinator at the hotel. She says many of them are still traumatized from the events of October 7th. More than 1 million Palestinians in Gaza have also been displaced by the fighting, which has destroyed their homes. More than 80% of Gaza's population of 2.3 million is now crowded into the southern Gaza Strip, where they are living in United Nations schools and facilities. The Israeli evacuees say they are anxious to move back home, even though they recognize that it may take a long time, if ever, to feel safe in their homes again. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Ma'ale HaChamisha, Israel.
Energy companies have discovered natural gas in northern Zimbabwe near the country's northern border with Mozambique and Zambia. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the Zimbabwean government hopes the discovery, if it can be exploited, will help reduce the need for expensive imported energy.
In a statement Thursday, Jemu Soda, Zimbabwe's Minister of Mines and Mining Development, described the discovery made in Kabora Basa Basin, about 300 kilometers north of Harare, as one of the most significant developments in the onshore oil and gas sector in the southern African region. Scott McMillan, the managing director of Invictus Energy, one of the companies exploring for gas and oil, spoke with VOA about the discovery.
And it's obviously a significant development in the company's history. We've successfully recovered a total of 4 hydrocarbon samples from 2 zones. This is the first Triassic age discovery in sub-Saharan Africa, and one of the most significant developments in the oil and gas industry in onshore southern Africa for many decades.
Australia-based Invictus has about 360,000 hectares in the Cabora Bassa Basin to prospect for oil and gas. The equipment and data that Invictus and other companies are using to explore the area were left by the oil giant Mobil before it left the country in the 1990s. With a rig contracted for another 2 years, McMillan believes Invictus is well positioned for the future.
It's obviously a fantastic start, and to have confirmed a discovery from Mukuyu-2, 7 kilometres away, and 450 metres up dip of the Mukuyu-1 well, which we can posthumously also declare a discovery now, is obviously opens up a significant resource potential that we've always believed in at Mukuyu. It's a bright and exciting future ahead of us.
Mukuyu is one of the areas in the Cabora Bassa Basin that is being explored for gas and oil. The Mukuyu-1 well collapsed before explorers confirmed the presence of gas there. Not everyone is happy with the $20 million gas and oil exploration project. Farai Magu, founding director of the Center for Natural Resource Governance, fears the new project, if successful in capturing resources, could displace local people and destroy the environment and contaminate underground water. He has a solution.
There is business sense in investment in renewable energy. They can supply cheap electricity, which is clean and easy to install in rural areas and also in our urban areas today. There's no difference. Actually, those in rural areas, some of them have got more energy sufficiency than those in urban areas because they've already tended to renewable energy.
Zimbabwe has for years been facing energy shortages as the country largely depends on thermal and hydro equipment that cannot meet domestic needs. With the discovery of gas in the Cabora Bassa Basin, Zimbabwe's government hopes that situation will change. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare.
Zambia says it is committed to rescuing dozens of miners trapped by a mudslide a week ago in the Chingola region. Vice President Mutale Nalamango told Parliament that operations to retrieve about 36 workers would continue indefinitely after a survivor was pulled out Tuesday after 5 days underground. Authorities said Wednesday they had found 2 dead miners. Torrential rains of a torrent of mud that buried the open cast mine in Zambia's main copper belt region. Water has been pumped out of one of the 3 mining sites. Further excavations are ongoing. And in South Africa, rebel miners blockaded more than 400 workers underground in a gold mine today, while other miners staged their own protest in a platinum mine. A mine operator told the French news agency AFP that 447 gold miners were being held east of Johannesburg in a near repeat of a 3-day incident in October. The head of legal affairs at the Gold One mine in Springs, Ziad Hassam, says a small group of balaclava-wearing employees took control of co-workers' security access cards so they could not get out from underground. 2 miners who managed to escape early Friday confirmed the events to the management. Separately, about 250 miners demanding better wages entered the 3rd day of an underground protest at a platinum mine west of Pretoria, according to the National Union of Mine Workers. A union spokesman said workers want raises and have other complaints. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Saida Hamdoun, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.